My name's Sean Collier. There's Aaron Kleiber.
Hello, my friends.
We will be joined by Chris Prexta. Don't worry, we're not going to scream at each other for an hour and 45 minutes this time. And also Alan Schultz to talk about Ready Player One.
Yeah.
We should have talked beforehand. In my mind, I decided that every week needs to have you narrating the movie. Like we did in Tomb Raider.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was really good. Parzival is just a kid from Ohio.
Parzival is a kid in a trailer park. And the only way to get away and escape that life is to put on some goggles and be somebody else with pink hair.
Does he have... It's more blue. It's more turquoise.
I mean, he can follow his heart.
It's nice.
I forget the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that's good. So we won't spoil it.
Yeah, we can't spoil it.
Because people are hyped.
I hope you're hyped.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg, back in form?
Let's say get hyped.
Get hyped.
More on the hype you need to get.
We brought
this
in
week.
Experts, a.k.a. Yes. Our friends who know more than us about things.
Yes. We're going to have interviews, segments, live via satellite.
This week
on You Can't Handle the Truth.
Good, Sean.
We've done a lot of these. It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, March 30th or thereabouts.
Yeah, it might be earlier. Who cares?
It might be earlier. The movie, actually, the movie opening day is Thursday, not Friday this week. Something about the holiday weekend. So we're talking to you. We're here.
Happy Good Friday.
Yes. Holy Thursday.
Maundy Thursday.
What?
Maundy Thursday.
Maundy?
For it. Yeah.
What's the Saturday?
I can't remember.
Yeah, they forgot to give that one a name.
Right,
it's just
now,
like the,
we're talking about movies.
Like,
don't make me get out of college things.
Glaze the ham so it'll be ready for the morning Saturday.
Yeah, coleslaw prep day.
Yes.
I don't know.
Ready Player One. All right. I read the book a couple years ago.
Read the book?
I liked it a lot.
Did?
It's not, like, look, don't get me wrong. This is not War and Peace, okay? This is not Slaughterhouse-Five. It's a good...
Easy read.
Good, easy bit of pulp reading.
You could probably, if you're, you know, if you're waiting a couple days to see it, you could probably knock that book out in, like, a couple evenings.
My reread was within 24 hours.
Yeah.
Saturday at 10 a.m., I thought, maybe I'll read it again beforehand, and I was done the next morning, right?
Yeah.
You can knock it out. I enjoyed it a lot. It's a lot of fun. And I think, like a lot of people... I was concerned seeing the trailer because the trailers had a different tone than what I remembered from the book.
Well, also, I think it's tough, too, that when you read a book or, you know, I listen to the audiobook in my car.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of create the worldview visually in your brain.
Yes.
So sometimes that's hard.
Yes.
You know, when you see the trailer. But, it definitely was like, oh, that's not what I was expecting. Especially the whole trailer being around a race.
Right, which is
not
in the book.
So your fears are like, oh, boy.
Yeah. So my fears were going. At the same time, I was, you know, there was a lot of hype over the last weekend about how for Spielberg, he wanted to kind of go back to how he did things as
maybe,
a younger director.
Yeah,
with
maybe
this
kind of
movie.
Reinvent himself.
Yeah.
I mean, because we even mentioned, like, just before the movie, it's like, you know, Spielberg's dramas have been his decent movies.
And Lincoln's good.
Yeah, and then, you know.
The Post.
BFG is a big
effing
garbage.
Yeah, that's what it stands for now.
Yeah.
Big effing. By the way.
Also my nickname on the streets.
Big effing garbage. By the way, it's a PG-13 movie, and more now, PG-13 movies take advantage of the fact that they can say fuck once.
Well, I think.
And it was mwah.
It was a good
perfect.
Choice. It was a good choice.
Yes. They nailed that.
They kind of have to.
Yeah.
In order to get that rating, they have to.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Hey, real quick side note.
Yeah.
My kids and I have decided to let my kids watch the Marvel Universe. This is just,
oh.
We always talk about swear words.
Because you've been
movies.
Waiting for years.
I have been waiting, yeah. And I think, you know, it's about time. And they were super excited. They wanted to see Black Panther. And
yeah.
So I said, let's go through the entire MCU up to Black Panther. And
so you'll catch up about a year from now.
So we'll catch up. And we got to Ant-Man.
Okay.
And I now have a new bit about how my son said the word pussy 17 times in 45 seconds. That's we don't say that word on the podcast very often, but a little side note, come see me live, and I'll be working out
a new
apparently,
bit. But apparently Luke the Nuke, if you book Luke on a podcast.
he might drop the word.
Anyway,
little side note.
Yeah,
we
just
talk about stuff like that.
Just so
will my kids see this? I don't know. Maybe
yeah.
During the F word, I'll be ha ha ha.
Yeah,
yeah, that's you.
You know when it's coming.
No emergencies.
Yeah. And so I came in a lot of anticipation, a lot of fear, and I'll tell you this: it took me a while to adjust to this movie because this is one of the most extreme cases of a departure from the plot of the source material that I can name. This, you know, if you're going, the one thing you shouldn't do is go into this looking for an adaptation of the book, you know,
sure,
because it is completely, it is a fully new plot.
It's almost, you know, it feels like that someone took a really old book that people forgot.
Yeah.
And then was like, let's adapt this for today, almost. Even though it's a book about it. Does that make any sense?
No, it does.
It felt like it was so far removed from, like,
it is,
the book was not written 4 years ago.
It is.
You know what I mean?
It is themes, setting, character,
right,
and setup.
Yeah.
And everything other than that. If you read the book, what I'm telling you is every challenge, every bit of the game is different from what it was in the book.
Yeah. And you know what, though? And I don't want to scare people because...
Yeah.
You know, the two of us and our two guests today all have read the book.
All read
and
the book.
We are pleased.
Yeah, I will say it took me a while to go, just to get my head around how different it was. And then there was one key chunk that we will not spoil for you in the middle that was so... oh my God, that was so great.
I can't wait to see again.
I would watch it again right now four times.
Yep.
I'll tell you, when they send me the copy for awards consideration, I'm going to drop what I'm doing and watch that scene six times in a row. And
definitely
after that,
one of my favorite scenes in a movie for a while.
Oh my! And so with that, it was like a reset button in my head, and I was like, "Yep, I'm on board."
Yeah.
And for all the changes, they kind of nailed this, didn't they?
I you know, the things that they did completely different than the book, they were really good.
Well,
and look, and when I referenced the, you know, nothing, there's no spoilers here.
Yeah.
If you saw the trailer, you saw the race that was not in the book.
Yeah.
And everyone I talked to was like, what is that? Like, what? And I, first of all, I just think pod race. That's all I thought.
Yeah.
I just thought pod race.
Yeah.
And I was just like, Ooh, I remember pod races. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
They better not be putting a pod race in this movie.
Yeah.
And we were all kind of blown away of how cool it was.
Well, I mean, it started, and, you know, you start, and you're like, okay, CGI racing. And then a minute later, you go, holy shit, this is really good.
It
this
definitely
is just
took it up a notch.
Excellent action
it
sequence.
It took it up a notch.
And, you know, as much as, look, I know there will be some people who are like, I wanted to see the book. I get that. But take a step back. The first challenge in the book is... walking through a cave and playing an arcade game.
Right.
In,
sounds
which,
really
which
entertaining for an IMAX film.
Works great in the book. In the IMAX movie,
they
did something that would work as a movie. And keep in mind, the author of the book co-wrote this screenplay, so clearly that was all with his blessing.
And I wonder, we're going to have to dig more into it. I wonder if he was like, I was going to put this in the book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or he's like, you know, or Steven Spielberg working with Ernest Cline, it's like, hey, we're making a movie now. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what other ideas did you have?
Yeah.
You know?
So
speaking of the other writer, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They got the right guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Zach Penn has written a lot of really cool other things. He wrote The Avengers. He did write 2008's Incredible Hulk, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And X-Men 2. But he's written a lot of Marvel stuff. He created Alphas. He wrote X-Men The Game.
Yeah.
And X-Men Last Stand, whoops-a-daisy. Sorry, Zach.
But they combined.
Did he write Elektra? Okay.
Well, hey, that was
okay.
You got to learn somewhere. He learned on the job.
Hold on.
Now you know what not to do.
Hold on. Okay. Now I'm just. I was like, this guy's good, and now I'm digging deeper.
This guy.
Okay.
This guy got good.
Inspector Gadget, PCU, Last Action Hero.
PCU. Okay, that makes sense.
He's getting better with time, though. I mean, since
no, absolutely. Oh, that's fun.
A Last Action Hero
fake
movie.
Is a,
that's
a
Chris Prex is sitting over here.
Chris Prex is in the thing. He doesn't have a microphone. He seems to think that he can be heard. He cannot.
Yeah.
But the point is, they to create this movie, they combined Spielberg, the guy who wrote the book,
yeah,
and a seasoned
superhero writer.
Superhero movie writer. Which
who
makes perfect sense.
A scotch better every movie since 93.
Yes. Yeah.
So he's there.
And you know what? The thing that bothered me, so apparently there is a huge backlash against the book, especially on Twitter and around the internet. And there's two sides of it. One is basically that the book is not, and look, I'm not going to argue with you, it's not the most woke book in the world, and there are definitely things you can pick out that you can have a problem with. Fine, that is absolutely okay. Like I said, I don't think it's a perfectly written book, it's just a lot of fun. If something in it bothered you on those grounds,
right,
that's fine with me. The thing I have a problem with is there's a bunch of people who are like, ugh, God, that book is just a list of references. It's stupid. It's not original. First of all, shut up and let people have fun. And I, you know what I
also
hate?
Also, it's kind of not. And we, you know, we discussed this. I think you and I talked about this. They do a really great job of why that stuff pops up.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not like, you know, you'll see a comedy movie.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever, Mr. Magoo.
Yeah.
It's not like it. You know what I mean?
Well, no,
it's not that corny.
It's not corny, and this Ready Player One
is a terrible example.
Is about is about a world obsessed with nostalgia and driven into a retro fantasy,
right,
by circumstance. It's not just, huh, look at all of my Dungeons and Dragons references, Twitter seems to think
Zuckerberg
it is.
Mark Zuckerberg was on Twitter every day,
yeah,
talking about how much he loved, you know, Atari arcade games.
Yeah,
it'd be the highest selling console.
Well, it bugs me because, like, I feel like there's this like kind of weird nerd cultural elitism that it's like, oh, if you're making reference to another thing, you're not original. You're not,
right,
like, hi, yeah, that's, it's a shame that not every book is Harlan Ellison and not every movie is the director's cut of Blade Runner. Like, let people have fun. God damn. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It bugs me when, like, people are enjoying a fun thing. There can be fun, pulpy stuff in the world,
right,
and there's people shitting on it for not being real enough. Like, go away.
Okay.
Like let people have
go
a good time.
Go watch the Florida Project and cry about the real world.
Yeah. I love the Florida Project. But
I
you know what?
Right?
Sometimes I want to see, oh, my God, it's the Battletoads. Like,
yeah,
sometimes,
right?
I want that,
and,
too.
And I will say,
that was
like,
in the trailer, not a spoiler.
If you do love the nostalgia stuff.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's not going to ruin it if you don't get it.
Oh, no.
But if you love it.
Yeah.
The four of us had a blast.
Oh, my God.
As kids of the 80s, just yelling out characters.
Yeah.
Like, we were like little children, like, fire truck, fire, like,
yeah,
like Ninja Turtles.
Everyone needs, okay, here's my only nerd complaint.
Okay.
You put the modern turtles in.
I noticed that, too.
And I a little bit of memory behind turtles. Oh.
He's with Michael Bay.
So it's the Michael
Son
Bay turtles.
I
wanted them.
The same thing. I go, there's a ninja thing in the new one.
Yeah.
I was so mad.
I wanted them to be like pixel graphics from the beat 'em up arcade game. Well, you know? Anyway.
Yeah.
That's the kind of complaining I'm complaining about.
Be the ones from the first one, all dark and
No, but that is so much fun. If you need to buy two tickets to this movie, like, go Thursday to enjoy it and go Friday to catch the stuff you missed. And it's great because it's not like, you know, it's not like Wreck-It Ralph where, like, Bowser has a spit take when he shows up. They just, in the background, everything is something.
Yeah.
Every character, every vehicle, every, you know, is just a thing from a thing,
yeah,
because that's what world we're in.
Yeah.
And that's really fun to, like, look away from the characters for a minute and go, oh, Chun-Li. That's just really fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. there was so many fun little characters to pick out. I mean, we were naming them for 6-7 minutes.
Yeah.
Because there's so many. But
yeah. And so we're going to fire up the satellite in a minute here. I just want to acknowledge I don't have a list because my phone is dead. But the cast was really good.
The cast was pretty good.
You know, the lead, Ty Sheridan, who was from, by the way, the kid from Mud. Remember? We did an episode on Mud.
I know. Mud's really good. And Joe, two very...
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, good... oh, yeah, Cyclops.
Yeah. So he was good. And Artemis was really good. Olivia, I think her name is Olivia Cook.
Olivia Cook, yeah, yeah.
Who was in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl and was just in Thoroughbreds, which is still in theaters. That's an awesome movie. That's the one that was kind of being billed as like a modern Heathers with her and her friend. Her friend is the girl from The Witch. They you know, catch a plane to kill somebody. That movie's really good, too. But she was great.
Always. And the villain of our time.
Yeah.
Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh, he was really good.
He's the villain in everything.
And Mark Rylance, who is in every Spielberg movie now.
Mark Rylance was really good.
He was really good.
Really good.
I did not really like him in Bridge of Spies, where he stole Sylvester Stallone's Oscar. But no, I did not.
I don't disagree with you there.
And
Lena Waithe, who played, if you know the book, the favorite, his best friend H.
Yeah, really good. She was really, really funny.
It was such a good.
Yeah.
It seemed, you know, I said I was like. It kind of feels like a Spielberg movie.
It felt a little
Back to the Future.
It's that 80s Spielberg thing of mostly bringing up unknown, you know, actors to play your heroes.
Which kind of leads us into our first Via Satellite segment.
Yeah, let me turn on the satellite here. Boop, beep, bop, bop, bop.
We're going to fire up the satellite and watch Anderson Cooper on Channel 1.
Yeah.
If anybody knows about that, hit me up because it's hilarious.
We're bringing in now a Spielbergologist.
Really
a local Steven Spielberg expert. You know him as Chris Prexta, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Here he is. Chris, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, so something's coming in. Spielbergologist is going on my gravestone.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. You're a filmmaker. Yeah.
Wife literally will say, like, at least once a week, can you talk about anything else besides Spielberg?
Because
at least once a week I'll come in, did you know I was reading something?
Yeah.
And just give her some random facts. We're like, oh, God.
Yeah. By the way, I don't think I've talked to you about it. About 6 months ago, I saw for the first time Close Encounters.
You're kidding.
I had never seen it. I came... I know.
Goodness.
I came to the theater. It was the maybe the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, they did the re-release. Looked great. Yeah,
I 4K. Loved that
it's
movie.
It's so good. I watch that movie at least once a month. I'm not even kidding.
I thought I was going to be like, oh, yeah, this one's pretty good, too. And I was like, this is one of my favorite movies instantly. But no, you're a filmmaker. Here's a reminder to everyone to go watch Echo Torch and also Streetlight Stories. Both I recommend highly. But
thank you, sir.
You know, you are a student of Spielberg,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, kind of give us what Ready Player One is in the context of his career.
Ready Player One, it's not all that shocking that he chose to make this because it really does fit so many things that he loves. You know, Spielberg has been a fan of video games his entire life. So he's been talking about video games. I mean, there's so many classic photographs of him. He used to have all these old arcade cabinets in his offices. We say old now, but they were current games at the time. But you hear all these people, tell stories of him challenging them to arcade games that he had in his office. And he would have, you know, Missile Command tournaments and Asteroids tournaments and stuff. So this really is so many of the things that are in this movie he himself is a fan of.
Yeah.
So it marries that. He's also on that kick of wanting to play around with the motion capture stuff. You know, he did Tintin.
Mm-hmm.
And so here he is getting to do this intersection of motion capture and VR and video games. Also this youthful story with the real world segments and whatnot. So it really is a mixture of all these things that he's loved so much of, you know, his whole life. It is shocking to me watching that movie that a 71-year-old man made that.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it feels so youthful.
Yes.
Like there's such energy and just joy coming out of this thing that it's just shocking that, you know, It was an older man that made it.
And he talked about, if you look, there was an interview with Spielberg in the New York Times, I think on Friday, where he would not, obviously he did not acknowledge, hey, I know that Crystal Skull and the BFG were crappy. Instead, what he said, what he would cop to is that, you know, he made the movies he wanted to make, mm-hmm. but while his dramas have remained very effective, Bridge of Spies and The Post and Lincoln most recently, he knows that his blockbuster-style movies have not connected with audiences the way they did Jurassic Park and earlier.
Yes, absolutely.
He knows that, you know, he's been doing things a different way, and he said with this movie, he wanted to do things the old way.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel that that happened?
I don't know, because to be honest, I'm kind of the perfect target for this movie.
Yeah.
Not only am I a Spielberg fan, but I'm also a kid of the 80s. So, yeah. So
right.
There's so many references. There's so many little touches
yeah.
about this that I love. I mean, just as simple of a thing as, you know, we see the DeLorean do things in this movie the DeLorean time machine. We see it do things in this movie that were just not possible when you saw Back to the Future.
Right.
And so there's little touches of seeing it, and then little music cues, since you have the same composer doing the score for this
right.
that did the score for Back to the Future. Little moments of that score where suddenly it just hits that little nerve in your brain, and you know, releases the same emotions from
yeah.
that moment in those older films and whatnot. I legitimately wonder if a teenager,
yeah.
what their, I'm thinking more to a teenager and kids, how their response to this movie is just the fact that it's VR and video games. Are they
yeah.
going to connect on that level without the references? There are some modern ones. I mean, I saw plenty of Overwatch characters in there, which
there
is a
Overwatch
modern
characters,
game.
There was
Tracer
Minecraft,
was all through
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Minecraft, Halo. So
yeah.
there were some touches on them. To touch back on something you guys mentioned, which is that the book, a lot of people accuse the book of just being a list of references. And
yeah.
I got to admit, I don't hate the book, and I don't hate on people for loving the book.
Yeah.
I will say the thing I liked the least about it was the certain pages where it would just be a list of references. But it's a book.
Right.
There's no other way to tell the reader that these characters are in this scene unless
yeah.
you list them. I think it works a little bit better in a film because they don't have to scream out at you that this character's here.
Right.
If you catch them in the background, you catch them in the background. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
There's certainly some references that are forefront
right.
that the main characters are either talking about or they're taking on the mantle of those certain
yeah.
characters. But the good 95% of the
yeah.
pop culture references are very subtle or buried almost. You'll catch something as they're going by.
Yeah.
And I just think it's an easier way to digest all that pop culture references.
Yeah, it's a case where I think for anything that was lost in translation from the book, and things were, this would be, yeah, that would all be too much of a spoiler, but there's certain, there are certain stakes that are lower in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some bad things that happen in the book that don't happen in the movie.
True,
let's
true.
Say that. And for things that might have been lost in translation, I think they corrected some things, too. I think there were some rough edges of the book that were avoided or sanded down in the adaptation.
Yeah. The only thing that they pulled from the book that I guess they felt necessary and might have been necessary, but was it felt different than Spielberg's history was the narration. Is that
there's a lot of narration.
A lot of narration, and it's just constantly feeding you information the whole time. It's just like constantly giving you exposition about the world.
Well,
and to be honest, Spielberg in the past,
yeah.
if we were looking at his classic blockbusters, He would have layered that stuff in
yeah.
in the actual story.
Yeah.
Like there were moments in, I will say, the only parts of it that I was kind of not bummed out by, but I was like, man, this is where I miss classic Spielberg, is there would be moments with Wade in the real world
yeah.
where the movie didn't allow it to get quite quiet for a second.
That's true.
It didn't allow, like, no voice, no talking, just sit with them for a second. So if you think about things like Close Encounters, there's plenty of moments with Roy where it's just, it's quiet for a second. You're just watching it. E.T., you watch Elliot. There's no, is just experiencing something. There's we're just watching them experience.
There's no moment where Chief Brody and his son stare at each other over the dinner table.
Yeah, there's no, there literally wasn't a quiet moment in this film. It's a, that, let me also say, this movie's a ton of fun. Like, just, there's so much joy pouring out of this movie. But if those are those classic Spielberg moments that I miss, where it's just like, let's just give the, let's just sit with this character quietly and experience what they're feeling for a moment. Like that shot in the trailer of this movie where Wade is laying on the washing machine.
Sure.
Like his bed is on a washing machine rumbling and he's just kind of staring out the window. That in a classic Spielberg movie, that would have just been music.
Yeah.
And you sat with him for a second.
Yeah.
And this thing, it's like wall, like someone is talking the entire movie. Like somebody is speaking every moment of this movie.
Do you think after now today, do you have more hope for the next Indiana Jones movie than you did before you saw this movie?
I don't know that I have more or less, to be honest. I just, because I, you know, Indiana Jones movie, let's be honest, you're going to be there day one. I mean, he could make 9 more bad Indiana Jones movies and you'd still be there opening night for the 10th.
Yeah.
Spielberg could accidentally hit record on his phone while it's in his pocket and release that video to theaters and most of us would be there opening night.
No, that's true. That's
like, he's, at this point, he's earned it. You know, he's earned the right to, like, at least give anything he's doing a shot, you know.
Yeah.
And to go back to what you guys said about the car chase scene, once again, it's all fake. There's nothing real in that. It's all CGI.
Uh-huh.
But you still have to choose the shots. You still have to block the action. You still
have to
direct it.
Yeah.
And he still directs action so well.
Really,
it's
really
not
well.
Not just a mess. There's constantly these little character moments. There's constantly characters making connections with each other.
Yes.
You know, so it's the cool moments break that, you know, it's a perfect mix of, like, here's a cool moment and then there's the character connection. There's a, you know, you constantly knew where you were at, you know, with the geography of everything. And he still, man, he just directs action so well.
I always think of the phrase, you are you, which is there's a documentary about Warren Zevon's last album where he brings Springsteen in to play on the album, and Springsteen, like, records a solo. And afterwards, Warren just says, wow, you are you. And that's what watching Spielberg direct
funny.
An action scene
you're
is like.
Right.
It's, and I mean, look, it took Marvel 12 movies to figure out how to do action sequences. Spielberg shows up and is like, this is how you do this.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is there's action things in this that's happening in a fake world.
Yeah.
Still feels better than 90% of that Marvel action.
Right.
Action scene. This movie really is like. What the one thing I like about an older director doing it is that he is calling upon old film references, not that are actually being used, but he's kind of borrowing, you know, language from these films. So there's a huge sense of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in this movie, which was in the book, but is even heightened more in this. There's Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
I mean, not the actual character, but just the mash of these different things.
Really?
Oh, that's right. He did. It was originally Gene Wilder was the original choice to be.
Oh,
to
wow.
Play, what was the Halliday?
How about that? Well, yeah, that would have made perfect sense.
Yeah.
In a better world.
Trailer, yeah.
We're running out of satellite time, so before
we
go here, I'm going to ask Chris to give it a rating on a score of 1 to 10.
Gosh, that's tough. I mean, there's as a friend of mine has said that, you know, there's a difference between good and fun sometimes. And
yes.
I just got to measure this movie in fun. Like, it's just so much freaking fun. I don't know. Like, is it? Raiders of the Lost Ark? No. But it's just so much fun. So I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10 for fun.
Yes.
How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds just right. And the satellite is now pointing at Aaron Kleiber again. It's a boop, 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 beep, boop.
Can you hear me? We're in the same room.
We have
Here
you.
Here we go.
We have you. We're going to move on right now. I'm going to let Aaron take the lead on this one because, you know, one of the interesting things for me seeing a movie where everyone exists in a virtual reality controlled world,
right,
is knowing that we're not that far off from that.
And it's funny when we call in this friend, even though sometimes he does come and see movies and doesn't even talk on the podcast.
Yeah.
We called him in about visual effects for Avengers, like Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And this is when I was like, hey, I know somebody who is physically building the things that are in this movie right now.
Yeah.
And also has a VR studio in his damn house.
Oh, I feel the satellite moving. So, Aaron, would you set up our next guest? Oh, this guy.
It is my friend Alan Schultz. Hey, pal.
Hey. Hey.
Now, it was so funny that throughout the whole film, this is the whole nother side of things in this movie, is that you're seeing this, you know, world in 2045, and Alan working in, I don't even know what to say, some of the things you've worked on, without saying, getting too specific, just like, facial recognition. Like, Alan works on things like that, where in this movie, where drones are searching for people's, like, mug shots, Alan leans over to me and goes, oh, we're building that. Yeah. what?
I have, you know, I'm fortunate enough to work with, you know, within the computer vision industry.
Yeah.
Don't
tell anybody what you do, where you work.
Seeing
we get in trouble.
Seeing this technology and how advanced it has, you know, how it's progressed.
Yeah.
And how it continues to progress.
I mean, the fact that I have been to your house and have been deep sea diving in the bottom of the ocean and had to leave the VR because I was freaking out and was going to puke.
It takes a lot of.
Because I felt like I was really underwater in a scoop in a deep sea suit.
When you're not used to that.
where is that going to be in 5 years? And by 2045, the technology in this movie, Oasis, like Alan, what does that look like?
Right. I mean,
VR? What's the future for VR in the next 5 years?
Currently, it's basically limited to the what can fit on the front of your face.
Right.
I mean, they just released another version of the Vive Pro. I have the Vive, and I've had it for a little over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
And just like computers from the 80s and 90s, I mean, it's going to increase exponentially.
Isn't it like 30 times every year technology exponentially improves?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Like Moore's Law. I forget what the
asymptotic. I don't know what you're talking about, but go ahead.
Exponentially increasing technology until the singularity when AI is basically born. But as far as VR goes.
Yeah.
There's a debate right now between if VR or AR is really going to be the future, you know.
What is that?
Augmented reality. So, I mean, there's a
augmented.
Whole other realm of augmented reality. So, it may be a marriage of the two, you know.
Wow.
Where you're mixing real life and in your Oasis life. But,
I mean, the technology of Oasis, is that kind of a little bit of both?
Well, exactly. I mean, you're doing as much physical action as you possibly can to input into that virtual world.
Yeah, because see in the movie, they have little treadmills and they'll have zero harnesses and
Right. So I mean, it's not just about the gravity. It's not about how you feel in that virtual world. It's about how you interact with it and how it interacts with you. So the technology in the movie, like the haptic suit, the haptic gloves. They don't provide just your ability to feel something.
It
provides feedback for your ability to touch and grasp.
I mean,
things.
we'll get back on the VR part of it. But I had Nintendo Wii remotes 10 years ago that vibrated when I shot something. I mean, it can't be that far from. They have to already have it, right? Do they have gear like that for VR?
They already you can already purchase like haptic vests and
suck
and
me sideways. That is bananas.
Yeah, and there are I've seen prototypes, current prototypes of like the gloves that that they have in this movie where it's all external, but eventually it's all going to be internalized into a glove.
Well, as soon as the first thing they'll invent is these gloves can touch boobs, because you know how technology works and stupid, crazy people.
Yeah.
It's like, guys, I think we invented real robots and they're sex bots. It's like, guys, can we just invent a robot that helps people first? Oh, it does help people? Get out of here with your logic. You know, like, it's, I mean, you know, because the first things they're going to be made are all porn stuff. And I mean, it's just fascinating that you just kept turning to me like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
This is going to happen in our lifetime.
I mean,
is that true?
Well,
I mean,
you know,
when you think about it.
I've seen this technology in my work and in real life. Like you said, I have my VR system at home. And
yeah.
If you compare it to the gaming of the 80s and 90s and how quickly that evolved,
right.
I mean, this technology is going to be here a lot sooner.
And our generation, what do we call the, you know, I'm the what is it that they made up a new name for it?
Zennials.
Zennials. We're in the middle of X and millennials.
Right.
But I mean, we are in the exact lifetime to see video games go from beep, boop, to right now.
And
we're in our 30s.
Right. And that was the entire premise of Ready Player One.
Right.
Is that Halliday was enamored with the 80s and 80s pulp culture.
Right.
And
that basically like led the charge for kind of this kind of technology.
Right. And what he's doing, what he accomplished in the book and, you know, how it was portrayed in the movie, I mean, it's all based on real
things that are happening.
Ideas that are happening.
Well, and that's the kind of stuff you watch stuff all the time where you see things are in the near future.
Absolutely.
Or you see shows about politics and you're like, this isn't very far-fetched. I wonder where they get these ideas. And then you're like, oh, the writers that write these political shows are Yale grads who have worked in the lobby fields. And or the people that are, you know, working on this, you know, or you see, you know, Sean and I always talk about Christopher Nolan has been reading books about time travel for 17 years. You know what I mean? And like, you're like, oh, yeah, they really do get in the real things and research it, you know? And it's fascinating. You're excited. I know. Alan is the guy, and we've said before, like, when Alan was like a year and a half ago, was like, hey, you know, my second office, I'm turning that into a VR room. And Chris Prex and I grew up with Alan Schultz for years, working projects and laughing together. And so when Alan says, I have a VR room, and he's the first person, Chris and I go, yeah, of course he does. Like, that's why you're here. So thanks, dude. That's
you don't have one already?
I know, right? But like,
what's wrong with you?
I always turn to Alan when I'm like, hey, Alan, I heard of this like alien thing. Is this a real thing? You're like, oh yeah, humans invented that.
Yeah.
It's
incredible. Like Elite Dangerous, the game. That's one of the games I play. It's a whole
quick aside. Yeah. So I don't have the patience for some of these VR games because you literally have to do everything. And there's this game called Elite Dangerous, if anybody's into it, the three people listening that actually have a VR system possibly, or maybe more, comment. Tell us if you know, your experiences. Let Sean and I know. But this Elite Dangerous, you literally get in a spaceship, and it's like, go ahead, explore the galaxy.
Yeah, it's like.
And you have to learn how to drive a spaceship. And you mine for minerals and you find alien like planets. It's bananas.
You're essentially Han Solo or like a space, you know, pirate.
Yeah.
Going on missions and trying to
get rich and have fun, dude, in space.
Yeah. Yeah, you're Star-Lord.
So, you are. And I actually got addicted to just watching the highlights on YouTube. So, go check out Elite Dangerous on YouTube and imagine being in a basically your own office chair cockpit with a helmet on, driving the spaceship through space. It's unreal.
Yeah,
what's your rating? We can go with Sean and I, like Chris said, we usually go with fun rating.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, definitely fun. Like I was saying earlier, there was just one tiny little detail that I wasn't quite happy with. Other than that, 9.5 out of 10.
All right.
For fun.
Thanks,
it
bro.
It was awesome. Thank you, guys.
Alan, that was a good one.
Just sound effects, too.
Yeah.
We're back. The game I would recommend, and Alan, I'm sure you're all over it, a super hot VR. It's the only virtual reality game I've played. If you're in Pittsburgh, you can go to Looking for Group, where there have been some comedy shows,
yeah.
But it's like a video game cafe in maybe, it's like in Brookline, Beachview, that area over there, and you can pay by the hour and use an Oculus Rift or whatever.
Right.
Super hot VR, it's a first-person shooter, but it's just like scenes, so you pick a scene, and then it's like you're in an alley, and you got to snatch this shotgun out of the air and get this guy, but this guy's over here that you got to elbow. So, yeah,
what?
You do that right now. You can do that right now. So, as to your point.
Yeah, is the, what was the game, the zombie game? Arizona Sunshine.
Yeah.
That's another one Alan has.
Yeah.
And, you know, the graphics are fine.
Right.
But you're running around Arizona during a zombie apocalypse. It's horrifying.
I mean,
you hear zombies coming from behind you. It's terrifying.
To your point,
if the graphics get any better, I can't play that shit.
Well, no, I know. Well, to your point,
I'd be horrified.
We are at the virtual reality game equivalent of Super Mario Brothers.
You're right.
Right now, and that means Mario 64 comes 10 years later.
Ooh, GoldenEye's coming.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You're absolutely right. You look at like, oh, I just got the Nintendo, and by the time I'm in high school,
right?
We're playing Ocarina of Time.
Exactly. It's a little scary because, like, yeah, I mean, this movie doesn't get into the dark side as much. Where, yeah, people are going to give their lives over to this shit.
Oh, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, yeah. When I was 18, I had a pager, and now I have an iPhone 10.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Now I'm getting scared.
Yeah. Well, let's not leave it on that. Let's leave it on. I'll tell you. Tell me whether or not I should see this movie. This is our final aside. I was not Ready Player One.
Yeah.
I reread the book on Saturday.
Okay.
And there's a long argument about whether or not Lady Hawk is a good movie. And I read that chapter and I was like, I don't know, I might rent Lady Hawk
now. You
know,
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I know it.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like
it'd be a good time.
I couldn't tell you if I liked it or not. I mean, it's one of those things where you're like, I'll watch this random movie.
Yeah.
From the 80s. Yeah, like Kroll.
I liked the movie Kroll.
By the way, a little Easter egg. There's some fun Kroll references.
Well, you know what? I also haven't seen Buckaroo Banzai. Now
that's
I want to go watch that. I've heard that one's great.
That's kind of fun, yeah.
Well, maybe I'll go watch that.
I actually might watch Buckaroo Banzai tonight.
Yeah, we're all going to go watch Lady Hawk and Flash Gordon. And Flash Gordon was not referenced.
Not good, though.
And it's, yeah, you saw it last year. You said it was bad.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
It holds up as being shit.
Oh, okay, good. let's rate this one and get out of here. Listen, this is one of those everybody should see it movies.
Is it
this is
win
like
best picture?
No,
probably
absolutely
not.
But like a Black Panther or like a Wonder Woman, a Star Wars movie, I would say just go. You're gonna have a good.
You're
time.
Gonna have a fun time.
Absolutely.
And you know, I don't know if it is for everybody.
Yeah.
But I don't think you need to know all the references.
Oh no! Don't think that you need to.
Because at the end
of
the day, like, did we see the big robot in the trailer?
Yeah.
We did. Oh my gosh, we did.
Yeah.
You know. You see Iron Giant, and we're like, holy crap, Iron Giant. But really, even if you don't know who it is, it's like, oh, what a dope, huge robot.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
This does not require source material. You'll have a good time. I mean, the fun scale is important. You know, fun, this is a 9.5. As a movie that I'm giving a critic score to, it might be closer to an 8.
Right.
Just because it's a little clunky up front. There is a lot of, you know, too much narration. But
you know how much Sean and I love exposition.
Right. But just as a great time, go see the damn movie. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely go see it. I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah.
I think it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This was a good one. We had guests.
Yeah.
This is like, this is a pilot for a television show.
Yeah.
We did really well tonight,
Sean. This is like Charlie Rose, but no, we can't talk. He's gone now. I don't know.
Oh, this was as good as the Stormy interview.
Yeah.
Well put together. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I want the thing that we're not spoiling in the middle. I want that today. I want to freeze my body like Walt Disney until I can do that.
I don't want to do that.
I would do that 12 times before noon.
It's so incredible.
You got to call
second
me
act,
after.
Second act.
Call me after you see the movie.
The second key?
The second key.
Second key.
Call me after you see that. Talk about the second key. And Under the Sea is the best Disney song. Bye. We'll be right back.